Blog Talk Radio.
Because if we don't, who will? We would like to welcome you again to another episode of MPH Radio, stand for Missing Pages of History. Today is the 29th day of January 2022. Our theme tonight is Understanding Human Rights, Civil Rights, and Power. We have a special guest, Camille Landry. She will be our special guest as we articulate the subject area of human rights, civil rights, and power. But before we do that, we'd like to say hello to all our underserved communities and say that if you would like to participate on this program, please feel free to call in at 818-337-0016, and we will bring you in by acknowledging your last four numbers. That's after you have hit number one to show up on our board. So right now, what we're going to do, like always, we're going to give you the outline for today's program, which will entail, number one, give you something to think about, and it relates to the concept of freedom, followed by MPH, Black Men Facts with Susie, a message to the community from our brother Alex Joyner, and then we'll take on our special guest, our theme tonight, Camille Mondry, speaking to understanding human rights, civil rights, and power. And of course, like always, at the end of the program, we'll call for your support to help build MPH and MPH radio station. That's the order for today. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to ask you to get out your pen and your pen or pencil and some paper. And what we're going to do is give you something to think about as it relates to this whole concept of freedom. You know, freedom is a concept that many people have died for. Many people still fighting for. Many people are still trying to understand what it is. So we're going to give you some context with freedom in for some of our historical revolutionary and progressive freedom fighters, such as Ida B. Wells. When we come to this question of freedom, she once stated, "I felt that one had better die fighting against injustice than to die like a dog or a rat in a trap. I had already determined to sell my life as early as possible if attacked. I felt if I could take one lyncher with me, this would even up the score a little bit." That was Ida B. Wells' concept of freedom. What do y'all think about that? How does that apply to your present-day reality? Another concept of freedom is by Sister Sada Shakur, who stated, "I'm not quite sure what freedom is, but I know damn well what it is, what it ain't. How have we gotten so silly, I wonder?" Let me read that again. Sister Sada Shakur said, "I am not quite sure what freedom is, but I know damn well what it ain't. How have we gotten so silly, I wonder?" Finally, Sister Sada Shakur, we bring in Brother Malcolm X. He stated, "You are not to be so blind with patriotism that you can't face reality. Wrong is wrong, no matter who does it or says it." And repeat again by Malcolm X and his concept of freedom. "You are not to be so blind with patriotism that you can't face reality. Wrong is wrong, no matter who does it or says it." And last, we have a concept from Frederick Douglass. He stated, "The soul that is within me, no man can degrade." That's right, he said it. "The soul that is within me, no man can degrade it." So we have given you about four different concepts of freedom. Maybe you want to think about it and tell me, how do they fit in into your day's reality? And if you continue to struggle for this whole concept to be free as a people. So those was giving you something to think about as it relates to this concept of freedom. And what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick station break with music with a message. And when we come back, have your pen and pens out for this week. We can give you some Black Men Facts. We'll be given by Susie. We'll be right back. And this is Missing Pages of History.
Beauty they possess inside. Give
That's right. We are searching for the greatest love of all, and we can find it through our history. That's why it's important for a people to know their history. Once you know your history, therefore all things are possible. If you don't know your history, you are doomed to act in a way against your own self-history. This is why the missing pages of history must be filled in. And you are listening to the Missing Pages of History radio station, which came into existence so totally for that purpose. So right now, we most definitely want to teach our children, and one way of doing this is to remind them about their history through MPH Black Mini Facts. Susan will come forward now and share with you for this week some of the MPH Black Mini Facts. Susan, we now turn the mic over to you. Welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening. Hi. The Black Mini Facts today is coming out of the PR. It's coming out of the PRSP calendar of January. The first one was on the 24th, which is Martin R. Delaney, doctor and Pan-Africanist, died in 1885. That was for the 24th of January. The 26th, Angela Davis, activist, author, and professor, was born in Alabama in 1944. And also on that date, historian and scholar Ivan Van Sertima was born in Ghana, 1935. On the 27th, we had Marian Anderson denied use of Constitutional Hall by racist Daughters of the American Revolution, which was in 1939. The MNC, led by Patrice Lumumba, defeated Belgian colonialism in 1959. On the 28th, Jose Marti, hero of the Cuban struggle, was born in 1853. And on the 29th of January, African Studies in Morocco protest the Shah of Iran's visit in 1976. And last, for the 30th, Gandhi, the political and spiritual leader of the Indian independence movement, is assassinated in New Delhi in 1948. And there you have history facts for the last week of January.
I would like
21 from the PRSP calendar.
We'd like to thank Susan for the Black Minifacts. Hope we take heed to it. History is something that we should never forget. So right now, like always, we want to serve our community and we want to hear from our community. And one of the things we do on a bi-weekly basis on this program, we have special commentary from and solely by Alex Joyner. He has a message to our community, so we can bring him in right now and want him to share with us what is this week's message to the community. Brother Alex, the mic is yours.
Well, I would like to welcome the listeners and the callers today. I thank the guest speaker for the facts and opinion that they will present to us today. I thank the staff of MPH Radio. Thank you again, Susie, for a wonderful job, and Mr. Robinson for bringing us this knowledge that somehow one day may be lost, but thankfully we have you to push it forward today. I would like to take a moment to remember a man who, through faith and friendship with Nelson Mandela, was a pioneer in the freedom of South Africa. He fought openly for the end to apartheid and for the South Africans to have the right to vote in their election. As we struggled in America for many years against a society that does not want us to have equal rights or the right to vote, there was a mirror image of white privilege and suppression of the black race on both continents. The rights of the Africans since the 14th century have been denied by many European countries that sought to enslave them for free labor and plunder their country's valuable natural resources. The Europeans wanted complete rule and authority over the African nations it could enslave by laws they made. Any African that spoke out that this was wrong was jailed or killed. Many Africans rebelled or left their country. Many fought wars of a rebellion against the European countries that had installed their government in the African countries as they had in many South American countries. The European governments used their influence to pay poor wages and deny the Africans representation. South Africa was one of the worst examples of human rights abuses by a society invoking white privilege. It seemed all efforts were in vain to remove the white government. Through faith and conscience, there finally came a stalemate. After more than 200 years of resistance, brave leaders came through. One peacemaker the world would never forget requested the freedom of his friend, Nelson Mandela, who was being held in a South African prison to die. He was freed, and the two began to work together to end apartheid. Mandela would become the first South African president, and his friend become a voice of the people in a better South Africa. The peacemaker, Desmond Tutu, died January 2nd, 2022. But like Mandela, he will never be forgotten in South African or American black history. Desmond Tutu has joined in history and in death his American friend, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as a fellow peacemaker in faith and trust that men can do the righteous thing and release their fellow men from bondage and exploitation. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteous sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 5th chapter, 4th through the 10th verse, King James Version, from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. As a child, I heard this mention of peacemakers from my pastor as he preached the goodness of God's covenant with man. Though when I thought of peacemakers, it meant the switches I had broken from the hedges outside and gave to my mother to whoop us when we did wrong. She called them her peacemaker. My mother said, in times of peace, prepare for war. The threat of those switches on my behind made me realize that it was better to be good than bad. Whoever the peacemakers were near my mother, I acted like an angel. This has been a simple lesson that I've taught my children, to be peacemaker, but be prepared to defend your ideas and yourself at all times. As I grew older, I learned of many other peacemakers who were fighting for justice and equal rights. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had become one of the leading spokesmen who was championing for equality and an end to unjust Jim Crow laws. His leadership was inspiring and encouraging to millions. The civil rights movement began to open society's eyes to realization that America was separate and unequal. After many violent marches and murders, the conscience of the leaders in the United States changed, and the first civil and voting rights legislation was passed as the Civil War to secure many rights. Many whites still try to ignore or disenfranchise the black population of the United States, even though they have made it the wealthiest country. During the same era, a hard fight was underway in South Africa, where the apartheid law were disenfranchising Native Africans by a small minority of European whites who claimed it was their right to rule the black man in Africa. In South Africa, the laws were extremely unfair. The political and justice system were corrupt, and the people suffered badly. The resources of the country were being exploited, and the Native Africans had no say. Finally, a peacemaker as great to the people of South Africa as Dr. King was to the blacks in America came forward. He was a man chosen by God to give God's word to the perpetrators of hate and unrighteousness that would help free the nation's freedom warriors, Nelson Mandela from Britain. They combined their efforts and began to organize and influence the South Africans to lead them and their country into freedom from white oppression and mental slavery. The story of Desmond Tutu can be best told by some of his most memorable quotes. Here are some I treasure. You don't choose your family. They are God's gift to you as you are to them. If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. Hope is being able to see that there is light despite all the darkness. If you want peace, you don't talk to your friends. You talk to your enemy. When the missionaries came to Africa, they had the Bible, and we had the link. They said, let us pray. We closed our eyes. When we opened them, we had the Bible, and they had the land. Without forgiveness, there is no future. God's dream is that you and I and all of us will realize that we are family, that we are made for togetherness, for goodness, for compassion. I'm not interested in picking up the crumbs of compassion thrown from the table of someone who considers himself my master. I want the full menu of rights. Racism and unfair discrimination have spawned slavery. When human beings have bought and sold and owned and branded fellow human beings as if they were so many beasts of burden. A person is a person because he recognizes other persons. In the Bible, we first encounter God when he sides with a bunch of slaves against a powerful Pharaoh, an act of grace freely given. Be nice to whites. They need to rediscover their humanity. For God's sake, will they hear? Will white people hear what we are trying to say? Please, all we are asking you to do is to recognize we are human too. The United States is a society that is split to the bottom, that has poor people in a country that was one of the wealthiest. Europe became rich because it exploited Africans, and the Africans know that. I am sure the world will remember the small man with the big voice who would not speak out against oppression and the fight for justice and equal rights, who never turned his back on his fellow man, but acknowledged him as a brother in the struggle for freedom. Tutu was a man of the people from poor and humble beginnings that became the people's champion for equality and justice. He never gave up faith or conscience to make South Africa a black nation led by a black leader and government. I agree with the board that gave you the Nobel Peace Prize. You, Desmond Tutu, gave the world in 90 years all you had to secure the rights of the South African people you loved so dearly. Yes, in times of peace, prepare for war. Fight for what is right and God-given every man. Freedom from discrimination and oppression is a war worth fighting for. Tutu showed many the way through his word and faith. Rest in peace, my brother, and love your family. Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Alex, for your message to the community. Right now, this is MPH Radio. We're going to take a station break with music with a purpose and a message. And when we come back, we'll have a guest, and we will entertain our theme tonight. It deals with understanding human rights, civil rights, and power. We'll be right back. This is the voice of MPH Radio.
We'll be right back.
from Michael Jackson, all he want to say is they don't care about us. What a statement. What is a historical reality when it comes to African people? They can sing with one voice. History showed that the powerful elite, they don't care about us. So the question becomes, what are we going to do about it? That's right. What are we going to do about it? This is why today we are taking the subject, understanding human rights, civil rights, and power as a discussion, hoping that we can maybe create a roadmap of moving forward and acquire the kind of human rights that not only we should have, but all people should have them. And we're going to do that today with our special guest, Camille Landry, member of the Alliance for Global Justice. We're going to bring her in right now, and she's going to discuss with us and tell us some important school that has been created around the whole issue of learning our people more about the importance of human rights. So at this point in time, we're going to bring our sister in, and we would like to welcome her to MPH Radio. Sister Camille, can you hear us? Are you there?
I am here, and I can hear you. Thank you, Brother Lee.
Good, good, good. Sister Camille, you're a woman with many talents and with many hats. But I know you have some very important information that you can help us fill in our missing page of history as we speak to this whole question of human rights, and more importantly, to create an institution for our people that will serve as a tool to help liberate our people. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to give you the mic. We're going to let you tell your story in terms of, one, what is the school that you work with that you have created, and how does it play into this whole concept of human rights? The mic is yours. Camille, tell your story.
Thank you, Brother Lee. Thank you for inviting me to talk to your audience, and also thank you for playing my favorite Michael Jackson song, They Don't Really Care About Us. You said it yourself. You said the topic for today is human rights, civil rights, and power. Well, Michael just told us that they don't care about us, which is why we must care about us. And that means all of us. It means that we must seize the power if we want the power. Now, I'm going to leave this right here for a minute for you all to think about, because I know you know what it means to seize the power. But I want to talk a little bit about human rights, because that is the basis of the power. And I want to talk about it in the context of by the Alliance for Global Justice, which has created the Lucy Parsons Popular Human Rights School. Now, in case you didn't know, this being missing pages of history is a good place to drop this information. Sister Lucy Parsons was an African woman born around the turn of the last century who became a leading organizer and advocate for union rights, for human rights. She was a socio-anarchist, and she was really quite famous in her time and, you know, was named as an enemy of the state by the United States government, which tells you that she was doing something right. And so we named our human rights school after Sister Lucy Parsons because her life, her work, her advocacy give us an example, give us a beacon for how to do what we want to do. So the Lucy Parsons Popular Human Rights School is an initiative of the Alliance for Global Justice, and its purpose is to create infrastructure, to create capacity by grassroots organizers, to create transformative change and end human rights violations, both in the United States and by the United States. Because it doesn't do us any good to talk about what goes on here without recognizing and being in solidarity with what goes on elsewhere. Some of the school a little bit later, but first of all, I want to talk about human rights in general and why that concept of human rights is so critical to the struggle for our liberation. First of all, human rights are not given. You are born with human rights because you are human, regardless of your race, your sex, nationality, ethnicity, language, religion, or anything else. You have human rights, and that includes the right to life and liberty, to freedom from slavery and torture, from freedom of opinion and expression, to the right to work and have an education and health care and many other things. Every human being is entitled to these rights without discrimination, no matter where you live, no matter who you are, just because you exist. Human rights aren't civil rights. Now, we had a whole civil rights movement in the United States talking about, you know, demanding, not talking about, but demanding, actively demanding our civil rights. We all know about the movement. But the difference between civil rights and human rights are that civil rights are granted to people by a government. They can be granted. They can be denied. An example is the right to vote or the right to access public accommodations or attend any school you want to attend, eat at a lunch counter, all of those things, ride in the front of the bus. Now, those things are important, but human rights are much more basic. The United States is the greatest attacker, the greatest denier of human rights on the planet, and possibly even in the history of humankind. But the hypocrisy of that is the founding documents of the United States outline those basic rights. The U.S. Declaration of Independence says, we hold these truths to be self-evident. In other words, any fool can see them and recognize them. That all men, they did say men, are created equal, and that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. That means they cannot be taken away. They are there. They're etched in stone. And that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That didn't work out for some of us, right? Because wherever Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and John Hancock and them were in 1776, I know where my ancestors were and where your ancestors were. We were somewhere in a field chopping cotton or in a kitchen cooking masses of dinner, okay? We were property. We were deemed as property. So the United States, at the same time, out of one side of its mouth, says these human rights are self-evident and that they are unalienable and they apply to everybody except some of y'all. Some of y'all are more equal than others. Some of you all are three-fifths of a human being, so you don't have these rights. Some of you all, by virtue of your gender, don't have these rights. And many of you, just by virtue of your color and ethnicity, have no rights or very few rights. And the United States was, in fact, founded on these principles of saying one thing out of one side of the mouth and something entirely different out the other side of the mouth, which they upheld at the muzzle of a gun, manacles, with whips, and with all other manner of violence, to the point that it constituted genocide. So fast forward to the end of World War II. The world had just experienced the most egregious violations of human rights. And I'm not just talking about the Holocaust. I'm talking about the mass murder of civilians as well as fighting men and women. I'm talking about the devastation of much of the world that caused millions of deaths and destroyed people's very ability to live. They destroyed fields and infrastructure like bridges and water purification plants. They destroyed homes and hospitals and schools. They decimated parts of this world that they deemed enemies. By the way, it's very interesting that when they developed the atomic bomb, the mightiest weapon known to humankind, they dropped it on the brown folks, not on the white folks that actually started that war. But again, we know that story. So it was out of the devastation of the Second World War that the United Nations was formed. And the intention of that was to create some kind of mechanism that would promote diplomacy, communications, and cooperation as a substitute for war. Because aside from everything else, aside from the humanitarian problems that come from war, war in the long run is not good for capital, and capital rules this world at the moment. So even though some people make a lot of money off of war, war ultimately disrupts the flow of money. So the United Nations was created to prevent future wars. Well, one of the first major things that the United Nations created was a Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It's an international document that was adopted by the UN General Assembly. It was adopted in 1948, and it enshrines. Now, enshrines is an important word. To put something in a shrine, you put the tablets of the Ten Commandments in a shrine. You put the Declaration of Independence, which is considered precious to this nation, it is enshrined in a vault. So this declaration was intended to enshrine the rights and freedoms of all human beings. And it was accepted in December 1948 to the UN, at that time. 48 voted to pass it. Nobody voted against it, but there were 8 abstentions and 2 did not vote. Guess who did not approve the UN Declaration of Human Rights? With the United Nations meeting within the shores of this country in New York City. If you said the USA, you guessed right. In 1980, Jimmy Carter, who I still feel was the most reasonable and rational U.S. president ever, managed to get Congress to pass a portion of the Human Rights Act, the part called CEDAW, which is the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. The rest of the UN adopted it in 1979, and the United States Congress ratified it in 1980. It's a Bill of Rights for women. But the United States government has steadfastly refused to sign on to the complete Declaration of Human Rights. Well, if you know your history at all, and I know that you do, you realize what the USA was doing in 1948. It was the height of Jim Crow apartheid. It was a time when the United States was still snatching indigenous children and throwing them into the particular hell that is Indian boarding schools, where their culture and even their personal freedoms, you know, were ended and many of them perished. The U.S. was engaging in all sorts of mischief around the world. It's not mischief, it's atrocities around the world to limit the human rights. It was fighting against the liberation of the continent of Africa, which was trying to break the chains of colonialism. It was trying to make sure that it maintained a toehold in Asia and in much of the rest of the world. So it shouldn't come as any surprise to anybody that the USA refused to sign the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So about 70 years ago, in 1951, there was a really bold petition delivered to two cities, Paris, France, and which is where the UN first met, in New York City, where the UN currently resides. This petition was developed by activist William Patterson and by our brother Paul Robeson, the famous actor and singer, but more than that, the warrior for social justice. W.E.B. Du Bois and a lot of other leading black intellectuals were among the petition's signatories. These Africans were bold enough to march into the United Nations and accuse the United States of genocide, specifically genocide against black people. Now, even the word genocide was a new concept. It wasn't a new practice. It's something that humans have practiced, have inflicted on others throughout our history. But the word genocide was coined during World War II to describe Nazi atrocities, and the United Nations latched onto it and started talking about it. But to that point, no nation had been formally convicted of perpetrating a genocide, even though we knew that many did. But back to Paul Roberson and our brother William Patterson, they delivered this 240-page petition called "We Charge Genocide, the Crime of the Government Against the Negro People." And they intended for it to be sensational. They wanted it to hit the headlines. The United States at that time was prosecuting the Nazis at Nuremberg, but at the same time they were lynching African people within their own shores, not to mention all of the other terrible violations of human rights that they were undertaking against people of color in general within the bounds and outside the borders of the United States. But you might imagine how media responded to this. First of all, they mostly ignored it. The Chicago Tribune called it a bunch of shameful lies. And the Polish man who actually coined the word genocide said, no, what they're doing to black folks inside their own country is just discrimination. It isn't genocide. But we knew, and we know today, that what the United States does to us inside of these shores, inside of these boundaries, and what it does to other people outside of the borders of the United States constitutes true genocide. I suppose that at this point I should really kind of explain what the United Nations said were those basic human rights. And I'm looking for that document that I had pulled up here on my screen, and it just disappeared. So I'm going to rattle that off in a second. Bear with me. Don't you love it when your computer just turns around and bites you in the butt? Happens more often than we'd like to think. Okay, so the UN Declaration of Human Rights talked about some really fundamental things. Article 1 says all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights, that we are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. It said in Article 2 that everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration, regardless of who you are, regardless of your race, color, sex, language, religion, political status or political opinion, your national or social origin, the property you have, where you were born, or any other status, and that no restriction should be made on the basis of jurisdictional or international status. Okay, so it doesn't matter whether you're inside the USA or where you're inside Mexico or whether you're inside Ghana. Everyone has the right to life and liberty and the security of your person. No one should be held in slavery or servitude, and that slavery and the slave trade shall be prohibited in all those forms. No one should be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. Everyone has the right to recognition as a person, a human being before the law. In other words, no three-fifths of a man. And all are equal without any discrimination to equal protection under the law. So if the law says you have a right to a trial by your peers, then everybody has the right to a trial by their peers. Everybody is entitled to equal protection against any discrimination in violation of this declaration and against any incitement to such discrimination. In other words, it's an assault on human rights for somebody to say or to demand publicly that you should not have those rights. It goes on and it talks about being subject to arbitrary arrest or detention, you know, or exile, to having an effective remedy before the law, to the full security of equality in a fair and public trial by an independent and impartial tribunal. Not being subject to arbitrary interference with your privacy, family, home, or your correspondence, or to attacks upon your honor and reputation. Everybody has the right to be protected by the law against these things. The right to freedom of movement and residence within the borders of each state, and the right to leave. The right to seek and enjoy in other countries asylum from persecution. So the right to asylum is very important. And that this cannot be taken away just for political purposes. That you have a right to claim nationality, and that once you reach adulthood, any limitation on your rights due to race or nationality or religion do not exist. You have the right to marry and to found a family once you reach adulthood. And you have full rights in marriage, during marriage, and at the dissolution of marriage. And that marriage can only be entered into with the free and full consent of the intended spouses. In other words, no shotgun marriages. You have the right to own property. You have the right to raise your own children. You have a right to freedom of opinion and expression and peaceful assembly and association. You have the right to join any group you want to join. You have the right to Social Security. I don't mean U.S. Social Security, which is a specific program. I mean security within your nation, such that there is a responsibility for each nation state to take care of its people. You have the right to work wherever you want and without discrimination and with equal pay for equal work. You have the right to just and favorable payment for yourself at a rate that is supportive of your existence and your human dignity, and that's supplemented, if necessary, by other means of social protection. In other words, if you're working a crap job at Walmart where, for minimum wage, by the way, there's no place in the United States where minimum wage pays a person enough to have housing, to be able to pay for your housing. So people have the right for the state to make up. If you choose to allow people to pay people an unlivable wage, people have the right to expect other means of social protection so that they can have the basics of life. And the right to form and join trade unions for the protection of your interests as a worker is a basic human right. You got a right to rest and to leisure and to a limitation of working hours, and to have holidays with pay. You got the right to a standard of living that's adequate for your health and your dignity, for yourself and your family, food, clothing, housing, medical care, social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment and sickness and disability or widowhood, old age, or the inability to work for yourself. And also, motherhood and childhood are entitled to special care and assistance. By the way, as I'm going through this, I want you all to think about your own experiences, your lived experiences, and your historical knowledge of the United States. And so far, by my estimation, the United States fails on each and every one of these points of human rights. The Declaration says everybody has a right to education, that at least the basic part of it should be free, and that elementary education should be compulsory. Nobody should go about it, and that technical and professional education shall be made available, and higher education should be equally accessible. We sure flunk on that one. And that education should be directed to the full development of human ability, so everybody is able to do the best that they can with the gifts that they have been given, and that parents have a right to choose the kind of education that's given to their child. Well, we're sure failing on that one. It goes on, and there are a lot of other rights, but the bottom line is these rights, one and all, at a nearly 100% point, are denied by the United States government and by its subsidy, its sub-interests, by its states, its counties, its cities. They are denied systematically and deliberately to a lot of people based on our race, based on our nationality, based on our ethnicity, based on our religion, based on our gender. The United States is the worst and most egregious attacker of human rights in the history of this planet.
Sister Camille, let me stop you for a second, and I would like for you to respond to this particular narrative that I'm going to ask you, because you have just painted a picture of the most, what can I say, the greatest game of deception that man has ever seen. It seems to me that what they have done, the U.S. and the West has done, was they have taken the concept of human rights, and then you think that they are really civil rights. You understand
that's,
what I'm saying?
That's absolutely true.
All the rights that we describe as human rights, they have taken it as civil rights, and therefore allow a certain territory or a certain power to dictate what's not, if you should have the rights or not, which also means that they are defining who has the right to exist. But I just would like for you to continue to do what you're doing, but respond to, they have inverted it. They have made up the league. The con game is to think of human rights are civil rights. Continue, Camille.
That is definitely the con game, and it's one that the United States has been practicing from the very beginning. How are you going to, you know, in the 18th century, and this is a colony, this place is a colony, how are you going to go to the colonizer, Great Britain, and say, you have no right to control us from over there across the water because we have rights that we were born with and you are violating them. And thus, we're going to create a war. We're going to, prosecute a war against you. We're going to kill you if we have to in order to claim our rights. But by the way, those rights don't apply to everybody. They just apply to us. In the beginning, they didn't even want the rights to apply to all white folks. They didn't apply to women, for starters, and they didn't apply to even white people unless they were property owners in the beginning. So when I say the United States talks out of both sides of its mouth, it has run a long con game on the entire world, posing itself as a beacon on a hill with the bright light of democracy, putting a huge metal statue in the harbor in New York, talking about, you know, this is the light of liberty, and give me your poor, your hungry, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, when in fact, even if you swam the Atlantic Ocean and came over here, if you were black, you would not get to breathe free. In fact, somebody's pretty doggone likely to put their knee on your neck and choke the life out of your black body. We know this. This is our lived history. So the question then becomes, what do we do about that? How do we respond to that? And that brings us to the question of what is the power of human rights, okay? And many, many of our people have told us that power is not something that is granted to you. Power is something that is seized. Power is something that only comes about when you have, you can't have power all by yourself. You can only have power if there are, if the people grant you power. The United States government only exists right now because the people of the United States support it. If all of a sudden everybody stopped supporting the government, didn't pay any taxes, didn't obey any laws, the government would crumble. We've seen that actually happen on a smaller scale during the civil rights era, because what Dr. King, what in other places we talk, the brother who spoke prior to me talked about Nelson Mandela and the people of South Africa. We've looked at the freedom struggles of the people of the continent of Africa, and what they had to do to get power was, first of all, stop giving their oppressor. Do not grant your oppressor the right. Our philosophers, our leaders, our hero warriors have told us things such as political power flows from the muzzle of a gun. They have said that power is something that you won't have unless you stand up and seize it. They have told us that if you do not demand the power doesn't exist. And if you do not band together with other people who are likewise undergoing these violations of human rights, you won't have any power. So for global justice, this is kind of a coming full circle here, created the Lucy Parsons Popular Human Rights School so that we could gather together and support people who are struggling for human rights in many different ways within this country. Now, one of the problems that we have faced, we talk about unity a whole lot. One of the problems that we face is that there are many aspects to these violations of human rights, and people will become active and start organizing and working for transformational change in the area that affects them most or that they're most interested in. For instance, some people will work on the issue of education. Now, we know that the education system in the United States is not and never has been anything that is in any way supportive of black folks. Malcolm said, only a fool would send his children to the enemy to be educated. And the reason he said that is that the miseducation of African children in this country is such that it robs us of our humanity. And then there's such issues as the school-to-prison pipeline, which is a very real thing, where schools are structured in a way to label black children as young as the ones in Head Start. I'm talking 2 and 3 year old toddlers who can barely toilet themselves, are labeled dangerous and mentally unstable and subjected to everything from medication, medication to being, you know, sometimes held down in their chairs and in other words, other ways treated like criminals. This starts with our babies, our toddlers. Actually, it starts in the womb with black women dying in childbirth at rates that are higher than any other industrialized country. You've got a better chance of surviving pregnancy as a black woman in Ecuador than you do in Oklahoma, where I live, or any place else in the United States. And by the way, it doesn't matter how well educated you are, how much money you have. Okay? Serena Williams almost died in childbirth because of the racism inherent in the system, and she is rich and very, very famous. So this applies to black women everywhere, where on our neighboring island of Cuba, a very poor nation, and it's poor mostly because of the U.S. embargo, which is a genocidal action, on the island of Cuba, without one-tenth of the resources that we have here, death in childbirth is very, very unusual. So anyway, I'm getting off track here. What I was saying is that people get involved in the human rights struggle based on what strikes them. So we have people working in education, or people working to change the healthcare system, or people working to change the criminal justice system, or the court system, or the system of policing, you know, or for water rights, because we got Flint, Michigan, and we got these doggone pipelines trying to poison people of color in the United States. So people work in their particular areas of interest or what hits them most, but frequently, even though there's so many people working for our civil and human rights within this country, we tend not to join together. And I believe, and ASGJ believes, that human rights is the basis of all of these struggles. And once we see these struggles within the context of human rights, which are universal, then it builds unity. And unity builds capacity for change. So that is the reason that the Human Rights School was created. That sounds rather long and involved, but the bottom line is really clear and it's really simple, that together we can do far more than we can individually or in small groups. And that disunity, which is often deliberately sown among us by our oppressors to limit our power, can be wiped away once we develop an analysis that produces unity. So, you know, I want to say something. Do we need to take a station break, Brother Lee?
Yes, I'm about to tell you, we're going to take a little quick station break. When we come back, you can close out your presentation, then we'll open up for some questions and comments. So let's just do that, take a station break. And audience, when we come back, Sister Camille will close out her presentation and we will open up for some comments where she may respond to them. This is Missing Pages of History. We must stay together. Let's stay together.
Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force of truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Over me, we talk to each other in a friendship way. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more country. Baptized birth into Richmond, where the ghosts of childhood haunt me. Walk the road my forefathers walked, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to when you came, my family tree, my family name. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain by brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. You said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth and you was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He said what I am searching for are the answers to all which are in front of me. The ultimate truth started to get blurry. For some strange reason it had to be. It was all a dream about Tennessee.
That's right. Won't you enlighten us? Enlighten us. Let's stick together as a people. Power only comes from the organized masses. It can't come from one person. We're discussing understanding human rights, civil rights, and power with Sister Camille. As we left before our break, Sister Camille, I'm going to give her final thoughts on these subjects, and then we on the subject matter, and then we're going to open up for questions and comments for our special guest today, Camille, we're going to come back to you, continue your thoughts, bring it to a closing, and then we're going to open up the lines for individuals who would like to maybe make a comment or have a question for you. So right now, welcome back to MPH Radio, and let's continue our discussion on understanding human rights, civil rights, and power. Camille, the mic is back in your hand.
Thank you again, Brother Lee. I want to say two things. One of them is that an organization called spirit of Mandela, and you have had people on your show in the last couple of weeks who have talked about what Spirit of Mandela did. They convened a tribunal last October in New York City called We Charge Genocide, which happens to be the title of the document that Paul Robeson submitted to the UN. And Spirit of Mandela submitted to the United Nations counts of human rights violations by the United States in a very powerful doc. Delve down into that deep. I would urge you, Brother Lee, to get some of the folks from Spirit of Mandela to talk about the powerful work that they did. This is an ongoing issue when we find ourselves in 2022 very much not better off than we were in 1948. But I want to close with the statement from our brother Ahmad Siko Touré, who is one of the great minds of the Revolutionary Pan-African Movement. And this is what he said. He said, without revolutionary consciousness, there can be no revolution. All of us who have to conduct revolutions have been able to testify to this. But where does this revolutionary consciousness come from, as it is not fundamental to us, nor does it come into being and develop spontaneously? Brother Touré says, history teaches that it is created and developed through ideological education and revolutionary practice. And we can equally affirm that without ideological training and without revolutionary action, there can be no revolutionary consciousness. And that, in a nutshell, describes and explains why the Lucy Parsons Popular Human Rights School exists. Ideological education to create the capacity to undertake revolutionary practice and create transformative change. You can learn more about the Lucy Parsons Human Rights School at afgj.org/HRS for Human Rights School. A is in Alliance, F is in Four, G is in Global, J is in Justice, .org/HRS. And I invite all of you to look at it at our website. There is an application on there for participation in our first class session, which should start at the end of April. And there will be further ones. You can learn a lot more about the school if you go onto our website and check it out. So, Brother Lee, I'd like to turn the mic over to our people who might have questions or comments.
Okay, right now we're going to bring in my co-host who's been waiting real patiently, Brother Alex. The mic is yours. Your comment response to our guest, Sister Camille.
Well, Sister Camille Landry, you have given us a ton load of information today. And I'm happy that you brought up the Spirit of Mandela. That brings a smile to my face because I've been looking over the documents and different things because I work with a lot of nonprofit organizations that have approached and written the United Nations and have made special requests and trying to form alliances with international countries to provide a solution to America's ongoing involvement in many countries. Your information, I'm sure, has enlightened us to understand the difference between the civil rights and human rights that all of us should be enjoying, and the oppression that is still ongoing in this country and around the world. We have been ignorant to a lot of information from childhood to adulthood. We've seen it in our schools, we've seen it in our workplaces, we've seen it in our doctor's offices, we've seen it everywhere. But lots of times we have shrugged it off and to say that that's the society that we live in, that some people are going to hate us regardless what. So we turn the other cheek and we deal with it. because we know that we don't have the medical facilities, the banks, and the schools and different things that to the other side. And it's because of the organization that we have been here over 400 years and have not collaborated together for our own advancement. So I like to pose to you, as we seek alliances and different things, I remember for years we have dealt with corporations like McDonald's and Coca-Cola and quite a few, which have gained heavily to nonprofits and different organizations. And I want to just ask you or just question you, do you think that the giving from those different corporations, even Nike and whatever, do they actually give that money in hopes just to look better, but not really trying to make things better? Because always when someone gives you money, there's always something expected on the other end if it's coming freely. So I'm wondering why so many good organizations that have started and started with a lot of funding, but then they fizzled out in about 5 or 10 years, and you never even heard from them anymore. So was the intentions good, or was the purpose wrong? And you can comment on that.
I think that that's a rather complicated issue, and I'm not qualified, I don't think any of us are, to really know what's in somebody else's heart. But I will say that we've been told by many of our leaders, many of our philosophers, that change does not happen just through goodwill, not true fundamental change. Lucy Parsons said, you know, if voting would change anything, it would be illegal, you know, if it would produce fundamental change. And the same thing is true of charity. Let me say something about charity, because that's really what you're talking about. Charity is a weapon of capitalism. Okay? What do I mean by that? If you, as a rich person who got rich through capitalism, are giving some of your money to people who are hungry, okay, and you exploited those people to get that money in the first place, and now you go pass out loaves of bread, crumbs, really crumbs from your table to these people, out of the goodness of your heart or otherwise, what you're doing is taking pressure off the system, because the real problem is that people need charity in the first place. Charity is a Band-Aid that you put on an infected wound, okay, that exists because of inequality, that exists because of the lack of human rights. So when a large corporation gives money to somebody to feed people or to educate people or that kind of stuff, as well it should, first of all, that's your money in the first place, because all money stems from workers. Workers create wealth. Never forget it. And then secondly, it's a way to take the pressure off what the government, what the entire system should be doing, which is guaranteeing the fundamental human right to have enough to be able to work and to be able to feed your family with the proceeds of that work. So sometimes charity also becomes a way to keep people from rising up. All right? Now, that having been said, I will take your money. You know, I will take the money. All y'all, take the money. I'm not telling you not to take the money. I'm telling you that that whole process, that whole institution of philanthropy is an arm and just another weapon of capitalism.
All right, sister, let's go to our next caller. Caller 6057, 6057, the mic is yours.
Thank you. Sister Camille, thank you for your excellent presentation. You know, it was very insightful. I want to raise an issue with you regarding, you know, organization of our people. you know, it was an observation made by Kwame Ture and Charles Hamilton 55 years ago that one of the things that has hampered our organization is that we're encumbered with three myths of coalition building. Real briefly, first, that in the context of present-day America, the interests of black people are identical with the interests of certain liberal, labor, and other reform groups. Those groups accept the legitimacy of the basic values and institutions of the society and fundamentally are not interested in a major reorientation of the society. Many adherents to the current coalition doctrine recognize this, but nevertheless would have black people coalesce with such groups. The assumption, which is a myth, is this: what is good for America is automatically good for black people. The second myth is the fallacious assumption that a viable coalition can be effected between the politically and economically secure and the politically and economically insecure. The third myth assumes that political coalitions are or can be sustained on a moral, friendly, sentimental basis by appeals to conscience. I want to find out, based upon your work and experience, do these problems plague our organizations today? And to what extent do they do?
They are a plague in many ways, and in many ways they are an instrument of telling y'all to just sit down and shut up. Now, I will walk with you as far as your route is the same as mine. It's kind of like when you walked home from school with your friends when you were a kid. You know, one kid lives on one block and you get to a certain street, one kid goes one way and the other one goes the other way because all you want to do is get home. And I think that that analogy is a good one, I think, because we have to understand what our goal is. Our goal is not or may not be the same as the goals of other people. You walk together as far as you are walking the same path and the goal is the same. But when the goal diverges, you need to forge your own path. That having been said, there's also the issue of incremental change. Mm-hmm. Incremental change can be good and it can be bad. For instance, when we achieved civil rights in this country, sort of a kind of a, because we don't really, but when the civil rights legislation was passed and then suddenly we had the ability to sit on any bus at any seat in any bus and to eat at the lunch counter and integrated schools and blah, blah, blah. It's a whole nother conversation about whether that was good for us or bad for us. But we achieved some degree of success in doing that. The danger comes in when we think that is all that needs to be done, because looking back across the last 50, 60, 70 years, we see that one form of oppression has been substituted for the old forms of oppression. So right now in the year 2022, there are more black people behind bars than there were black people in chattel slavery. Okay, but slavery has been overturned. There are, our schools are more segregated now than they were in 1950. And in fact, our schools are less effective in teaching black children than they were in 1950. So incremental change can turn around and bite us in the butt. But on the other hand, none of us would freely vote to return to a time or choose to return to a time where we had to give up our seat on the bus. So that incremental change can act as a pressure release valve for people trying to forge true social change. But I'm certainly not going to suggest that we should go back to a time where we didn't even have that little smidgen of rights. that we do now. Unity is a concept that people, I think, misuse. Unity doesn't mean we all sit together and hug each other and sing Kumbaya. Unity means that we work together on the things that are problems for us together. But you only walk home as far as it gets to when you walking out of your way and have to put in extra steps.
All right. Thank you, Carla. Next, we'll go to caller 4298. And to our callers, please try to keep your comments to a minimum of 2 minutes. Caller 4298, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Brother Lee. Thank you. And greetings to Sister Camille. I'm not sure what questions I have. It's very, very interesting analysis that she put forth, and I appreciate that. I think it's the correctness or incorrectness of the ideological and political line that is decisive in any event. And we have to unite the many to defeat the few. I think that's the basic strategy. We have a common interest, and we must pursue that common interest, and especially as workers. I really don't have any questions at this point. I'll just leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla.
Thank you, my brother. I'm reminded of a quote, one of my favorite quotes by Brother Frederick Douglass, a true warrior. He said, "Power concedes nothing without demand. It never did, and it never will. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have found out the exact measure of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them, and these will continue till they are resisted with either words or blows or with both. The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress." In other words, if you accept the nonsense will be heaped down upon your head.
All right, Camille, we are going to our next caller. Caller 7236, 7236. The mic is yours.
I just want to say it's been a wonderful show. And thank you so much for just a wonderful, informative show. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Camille.
Okay, Camille, let's do this. We're going to a station break with music, with a message, and when we come back, we're just going to actually give us your summation on the theme, understanding human rights, civil rights, and power. Then we'll be making some announcements and closing remarks, and you are listening to MPH Radio, Missing Pages of History. Let me give y'all something to think about when we talk about institutions. It's something that should be done throughout the year and not just one day. And it also deals with this whole question of understanding our human rights. I'll play this song, and Camille, I want you to respond to it as it relates to our discussion today, understanding human rights, civil rights, and power. Listen to this song.
We call it Ujima, collective work.
We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. We're speaking with Camille Landry. She is discussing the theme today, understanding human rights, civil rights, and power. Before we have her final thoughts for today, what we would like to do is make a couple announcements. We first would like to just share with our listening audience that we ask you to support Pan-African Roots Publishers in first and second value, dealing with the theme, we demand the full disclosure of this, we demand the full disclosure and digitization of all slavery era records. There's a volume one, volume two. The author is Bob Brown. For more information, go to his website, www.a-aprp.gc.org. Let me read it again, www.a-aprp.gc.org. Following that, we'd like to remind everyone, particularly friends and supporters of Missing Pages of History, that coming up this summer from July 23rd to 31st, there will be a Black History Educational and Cultural Travel Challenge, a tour to Cuba. We want to give everybody the opportunity to go to Cuba, and they'll be visiting three provinces, one Guantanamo, second one Santiago, and the last one is the capital, Havana. If you're interested in going, please visit the website www.aaa-cuba.com, or you can call 804-549-7492 or 202-714-9435. You're talking about filling the missing pages. We're going to connect with our brothers and sisters, and it will be a trip of your lifetime. So all those who works with and appreciate the life and works of Mr. Joyner, we're going to ask you to come in his name, because that was one of the things on his bucket list before he made transition. We were scheduled to put a delegation together with friends and supporters of MPH to go to Cuba. So we ask you to contact us, as well as African Wellness Association, and just come and join us on that tour. So those are our announcements, and we would like to remind you that every other Saturday, starting at 1 p.m., you can listen to this radio program. Please do that. Please do that, and by doing that, you will not only be a supporter of MPH, but you become more enlightened on information as it affects our underserved communities. When you don't have information, you cannot think, and when you cannot think, it becomes very difficult to free yourself from the various forms of oppression. So those are our little side tidbits of the day. I hope you put it down in your book. And at this point in time, we'll go back to our special guest, Sister Camille, and we ask her for her final thoughts as relates to today's theme, understanding human rights, civil rights, and power. Camille, the mic is yours.
Thank you again, Brother Lee. And let me echo what you said about this delegation to Cuba, because if you haven't been there, you should go. You should go see what it looks like when people come together and demand their liberation, where they seize it from the jaws of power and turn the power of the state to the good of the people. Go see for yourself. I want to close with a quote from Nelson Mandela. Our brother Mandiba told us that to deny people their human rights is to challenge their very humanity. Furthermore, he said, where there is unity, when there is unity, there is always victory. I want you to think about that always. And I want you to pick up the work. You are a worker. Pick up the work wherever you are and pursue justice and pursue human rights. Pursue the work of our liberation in whatever sphere you operate. If you're an educator, then educate for liberation. If you're a healthcare provider, then heal for liberation. If you are the person who picks a sanitation worker, clean your city for liberation. If you are a teacher, teach the children for liberation, because that is the only way that we will get to our final destination. I want to say thank you again to Brother Lee for having me on the program, and thank you in particular for all of those who stuck with me throughout this conversation. Please go to afgj.org/HRS and check out the Lucy Parsons Popular School of Human Rights and become a part of this endeavor to create the foundation for transformational change.
And on that note, Camille, we'd like to thank you for being with us today and helping us to fill in one of our many, many pages, missing pages of history, particularly in the area of understanding human rights, civil rights, and power. We thank you. And on that note, we'll go to our co-host tonight, our co-host this evening, and we'll bring back Alex. Alex, we'd like to have your overall final thoughts for today's program. Brother Alex.
Well, again, Mr. Lee, I've had a wonderful time sitting here listening, and a lot of questions that I've had have been answered, and a lot of new questions have cropped up. So I'm going to do a little bit more research on a few things that I've learned today, because that's the most important thing. And not to quote, overquote Mr. Mandela, he said it was always seems impossible until it's done. And education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world. We have to change the world of our perception of being African-American, black, whatever we want to call ourselves going forward. Because it's the perception of us that has been painted by someone else that does not truly tell who we are. If given a fair chance, a fair opportunity, we can achieve great things. We are a great people. We're a great society. We're great fathers, great mothers. We have good children. We've been labeled otherwise by other societies. But that should not hold us back. We should move forward, be steadfast in our belief that we can change our neighborhood, our state, our government, and we can make them work for us, not against us, as they have been in the past and making laws to oppress, disenfranchise. So I've taken in a lot today, and I've loved every moment of it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alice. Thank our special guest, Camille. Thank all our participants today. Thank our listening audience. Thank all our friends and supporters. And we remind y'all our next program will be Saturday, February the 12th at 1 p.m. Put down your calendar. Spread the word. We want y'all to help us this year to popularize this radio station by sending information and programs and activities as we have them to your network. Please come and help us. If you'd like to join the support club, fans and friends of MPH Radio, please email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. mphradio@yahoo.com. We can tell you how to support us, how to become an active member, and become a part of this radio family so we can make this into an international institution that will serve our people well. We speak for the voice of the voiceless to those underserved communities. And like always, we will never forget about our Mother Africa. We speak to all those forces and others that is fighting for that humanity. So until next time, we'd like to thank you for listening to MPH Radio. Thank Sister Camille for giving her perspective on the topic, understanding human rights, civil rights, and power. Until next time, please come and help build the institution, help support us, and remember, without information, you cannot think. And without organization, you cannot think clearly. Come and help build MPH Radio. Until next time, I leave you with the message from Melissa Keys. We are here for you. We see you on the 12th of February. This has been MPH Radio.
Wow.
mphradio@yahoo.com. Your support is welcome. We thank you for supporting MPH Radio.